Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. Movies go by and have a glance, hypnotized as if in a trance. Stories from the distant past, played out by writers, directors, and cast. Who knows what others see in life? The priest, collector, the general's wife. Who knows who is different and who is the same? We all are watching the Open Grove game. Oh, my friends, it's so great to be with you. I'm glad we can be together. What do you want to do? I think the best thing to do when you don't know what to do is watch a movie. Let's watch a movie together. I've always loved the movies. I'm inspired by them. I love going to the movies. I love having the movies come to me. I like meeting the movies halfway. You know, if you can't bring Muhammad to the movies, take him to the mountain. Because there's going to be a movie there, maybe. They're going to project it on the side of the mountain like Stone Mountain does with the laser shows. Oh, look, there's Jefferson Davis. His eyes are spinning. The first movie that I ever remember seeing. Now, my mother says my first movie was Sound of Music. I have no memory of this. Maybe I blocked it out or something. But the first one I remember seeing was a Wayne Newton movie called 80 Steps to Jonah. So I've never heard of that. Well, yes, of course you haven't. I wasn't even sure it existed. I had to look it up later. And yes, it does. Wayne Newton was in this movie. Now, I've since gotten it confused with the Hitchcock movie, 39 Steps. So in my mind, it's 39 Steps for Jonah, and it's about a guy named Mr. Memory who goes to a camp for blind children, and his life is transformed after a spy is killed. But I think it was about something entirely different. I think maybe Wayne Newton was a drifter. He came to the camp and he was, Dankeschön, darling Dankeschön, thank you for teaching me German, he said. That was the song. And he's famous for that. It might have come out of the movie. I don't remember. But I do remember that this movie that wasn't so great left a lasting impression. Sometimes great movies affect me. Sometimes not so great movies do. But that's because movies can get in a part of your brain called the movie part. And sometimes you even mistake it for your own experience. That's happened to me. Did I own a chocolate factory? I may have. I don't remember. I think I did. I used to think I was in sitcoms when I was little. I used to confuse my life with cousin, what's his name, on Brady Bunch that comes in. Cousin Wilbur or Willie or Eddie. Or don't yell it out. I don't care. It was me. But I know that wasn't really me. But you know how entertainment is. It gets into a part of your head. Novels do that. They let you experience other people's lives the way that dry history doesn't. Wet history does. And by that, I mean fiction. You know, stories allow you to submerge yourself. Is this like an adult baptism? Say, oh, I am going to the mikveh of storytelling, and I will be submerged, and when I come up, I will be wet. And maybe transformed. Who knows? It's like emerging from the womb. When you come out of a movie theater, it's like that. It's like you're being born all over again. That's why you have that kind of viscous goo on you. Say, what is this? Oh, that happens when you're coming out of the birth canal, a.k.a. The movie theater, the multiplex. They used to only have one theater. Now they have 50 in one under one roof. Now, they've made the screen smaller. When I was young, the screens were the size of a city block. And you could just look up and you'd think, oh my goodness, Wayne Newton's head is huge. Later I learned it is that big. It's amazing. He endures because of the large head. Another movie experience I remember was from high school. We were going to watch a movie. There was a fundraiser. Say, we're going to sell tickets and we're going to show a movie in the cafeteria. And it's going to be Tommy by The Who. I was like, okay, I don't know, I'm not super thrilled with that, but it seems kind of cool. So the day of, we have our tickets to Tommy, the funds have been raised. We get there and they say, hey, look, some of the mothers have objected to this movie, say it's immoral and corrupting and everything. So now we're going to watch Day of the Dolphin. And none of us wanted to see that, really.
Thing on Fa's back will hurt Fa.
Ka love Fa.
Yes, get the thing on Fa's back.
So watch that and go, man, this is dumb. It's about dolphins doing something with bombs. There was one named Fa, one named Ka. I think the other one's named You. But that's the way it felt. It felt like, boy, we've been, there's a bit of bait and switch here. If you buy tickets to one movie, then you end up seeing another. Oh, isn't that like life? How so? I don't know. You figure it out. But we're gonna watch a movie in a bit because I made one. So how could you make a movie for radio? How is that possible? Isn't it a radio play? No, it's an actual movie. It's digital, just like real movies now. So it's indistinguishable. You don't need film anymore for movies. So therefore, you know, it can be a film in quotes. I'm holding my fingers up as if I'm prying something away, prying a sign off the wall. And it's supposed to be quote marks because Victor Borge didn't, I don't know if he made a proper sound for that. What are you doing, Victor? I don't know. Punctuation. But I got a movie for you. And I don't know if it's good or funny. It's like, well, you're not normally funny. And now you're hurting me. I don't know. I want you to laugh. Laugh with me. Let's just laugh. Oh, goodness. A forced laugh. There's nothing worse. But I want you to watch this with me and say, well, you know, isn't it the pictures that are important? Maybe. You know, I found a little interesting film a while back that's affected me. It's a very short film from 1930, and it's called Tomatoes Another Day. And it was conceived and executed as a satire on the fact that sound, and it's an early sound movie, sound is unnecessary to tell the story. So the characters in it are acting very stilted, and you go, here we are, standing together. You know, guy comes back in the room and got his hat, and the woman says, I guess he forgot his hat. Like that. So they're making fun of the fact that the dialogue is extraneous. You can just see what's happening. You don't have to be told. It's like when you have the commentator on watching sports on TV, and he's running down the field. I see that. Sometimes they use the time to tell you needless trivia as you're watching the games. What is this? Why do they feel the need to have somebody talking over what you're looking at? Why don't just sound effects? They used in silent movies, sometimes they'd have a guy playing the organ. So I'm going to add some organ sounds that sound like little birds because now they're showing pictures of birds. That's an organ. You like how I do that on the organ? That's my mouth. My mouth organ. Is the mouth an organ? No. Is the tongue an organ? No. Is skin an organ? Yes. The skin organ. Now you're getting dangerously close to sounding nasty. But you ought to check out that movie sometimes. What? Day of the Dolphin? 80 Steps to Jonah? Tomorrow's Another Day. Check them all out. Go back. Now that we have the internet and all, you can see classic movies on demand. Demand everything. I love that. On demand. I demand it. Everybody now is a sovereign, is a king. I demand to see a movie. That was my fantasy when I was a kid. So I demand to see this. I remember when I was little, the public station ran the British comedy, The Goodies. And then for years went by when I never even saw it again or heard about it or never knew anybody had seen it. And I was like, man, I want to see The Goodies. And there was no way of seeing them again. Now I can see them. Is it still funny? In my opinion, yes. Ike thump, like that. That's if you go, oh, he's quoting The Goodies. Yes, he is. Isn't that amazing? What world we live in. So I can watch all classic movies, and I have been doing that. So maybe I'll get some ideas to talk about on the radio if I watch some old movies. Now, I force myself to watch the old black and white movie because I think, oh, they're going to be boring or something like that. I want to see Iron Man or what have you. So I want to see somebody flying through the air and punching. It doesn't have kung fu in it. And I'm telling you, a lot of the early movies did not have kung fu in them. But so I watched some movies not long ago. I watched Rashomon, Kurosawa, and then I watched Rules of the Game by Jean Renoir, and then I watched Rome Open City by Rossellini, and man, I'm telling you, they were good. Oh, they were really good, especially that last one, Rome Open City. I don't know if you've seen this, but if you want to be scared by the idea of Nazis coming and searching your house and everything, this is the one. It's just the edge of your seat. It's so, It's a little, now, I'm not going to, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a little bit, it's a little bit like Rogue One in that, you know, the heroes, maybe they don't all make it to the end, but it's really, and there's no, I don't know that there's a torture scene in Rogue One. But these are great movies. I'm just, are you recommending them?
Yes, sir. I highly recommend them to you.
Don't come to me for movie recommendations. See, I guess I just love everything. I find it hard to critique a movie because I'm still fascinated by it. Look, it's moving. You know, anything like that, it's still the fact that it exists to me is still fascinating. How is that? It looks like there's people up there. And you get so, willing or unwilling suspension of disbelief, I feel suspended from my ears. I'm hanging from little hooks. I got hooks in my ears and my eyes like I'm a combination of a faker and the poor fella from Clockwork Orange. Ah! I feel as if I'm at the mercy of the storyteller, of the person showing me these images. I feel completely submersed, submerged, submersible, submersed. Which is it? I don't even know. Give me a minute. I'm going to look it up. I don't care. Under. Like I'm underwater. Like I'm surrounded. But I'm breathing somehow, magically. Why is that? Because there's a bubble of oxygen around my head. Why? Because the TARDIS can extend the atmosphere outside of the... Okay. I believe you. I believe everything I'm told about that. Sometimes I forget that actors are in a studio or on a set or something like that, or they're just, they're what they call CGI, which is stands for cartoon graphic internodules or something. I don't know. But, you know, it's not real. But I want it to be real. I want my imagination to be able to, I would love to be able to project my imagination on things. The other day I was having a nightmare. And I was having this nightmare that I was in the bathroom and I looked out the door and on the floor there was a shelf elf. You know what I'm saying? Like at Christmas, those little shelf elf things. I wish I was making this up because I may be confessing something I don't even realize. But then I turned away and I looked back and it was gone. And I was terrifying. It doesn't seem in the... You'd think, oh, if that really happened, I'd be like, oh, it must be a ghost. But in the dream, it was terrifying, as if it was a little demonic. The elf had come alive or something. So I ran out, and I was telling somebody, like, I guess it was my mom or something. Mom, I yelled, this is telling. I'm yelling for my mother in a dream. But I said, help me, help me, help me, come and see this. And she comes back with me, and the shelf elf is gone, and it's been replaced by a little plastic Santa, which also disappears. So by now, I'm screaming. And I guess I woke myself up, you know, because I was doing that. Very similar to the noise that cats make when they see a mouse or something. And I woke up, but I woke up and the dream was still, I could see my room and the end table, but the dream was also still there. So it was sort of projected on my vision. So I saw the figure of my mother there in a kind of a yellow, smoky haze. It was the weirdest thing. I could see the dream and the reality at the same time. And the brain is a wonderful thing, how it imposes my own thoughts and things over the outside world. Oh, I feel like you're getting to something bigger. Am I? Am I, though? Am I? Or am I not? Things can seem profound and they're not. I'm hoping for that phenomenon. You know how that thing where you see faces that aren't really there? Like you look at, oh, I don't know, like a portrait of your grandfather and you go, oh, I see a face. When you're supposed to see a face. Oh, I also see, but his face looks like the front of an old car. I don't know, what's that reverse of when you see objects and faces? But I'm digressing, so I'll just stay out here. Let's digress together. Come on, let's go off on a tangent, like a branch. Let's go off on the end, but it'll end, the branch will end. We can hop to another tree. We're flying squirrels, friend. We're monkeys. If the tangent ends, we will jump onto the tangent of another thought. Trees, my friend, are like neurons, aren't they? Dendrites. Dendrites are dendrites, whether it be a plant in your yard or whether it be a cell in your brain. And I invite you today to come to a movie that I have made for you. And we will watch it. We will listen to it in the theater of the mind. So I don't like the theater in the mind. It scares me. Why? Well, it's dark. Yes. And the floors are sticky. What's that? Sticky on the floor. Oh, that's brains. That's the problem of going into the theater of the mind. There's other things in there. Your memories, too. You bring so much with you. If only you could leave your brain outside, you know? But I guess you need your brain. But maybe you ought to, when you're on the way out, you should dump it in that recycle bin with the 3D glasses. I'm done with this. What do I need this for? But you do bring all your memories and everything to a movie. So just like I confused the 80 steps to Jonah with the 39 steps to Mr. Memory, which is not the name of the movie, you know, you get all that mixed up. You bring so much to a situation. That's why you can't always remember what you've seen, because you've got these things in your head, rules in your head, rules of the game to bring to the open city out there in the grove. So the name of my movie that I made, it's not a movie, it's still a radio show. I know it's hard to believe, but it really is. I mean, first of all, look at this picture. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. You know what it is? It's your self-portrait. Thank you. See, you know, you don't have to actually see it. It's very good, but it doesn't look like you. Okay, all right. The eyes are funny. Okay, fine. I didn't ask really for a critique. And, you know, not all portraits look exactly like the person. Ongs do. Who? Ong. Yes, they do. They look very almost photorealistic. I understand that. But yours don't. I know they don't. I mean, it's more of an impression. No, it's not. It looks like that because of the lack of your skills. Yes, this is true. I'm not very skilled, but I love to do things. I love to make things. And, you know, even if it's completed, isn't that wonderful? I mean, you go see a bad movie, you think, well, the movie got done, right? You go see a bad painting, you go, well, every bit of that canvas has been painted. That's wonderful. It's been completed. Who's to say it's not good? Or, well, I guess critics. And we do need that. We need to be able to differentiate what's brilliant and should endure and what's awful, right? Do we? I guess maybe. If you're spending money on it, who wants to go to an art show that's going to be disappointing? Who wants to be disappointed? It's best to never be disappointed and only have positive experiences. So make sure that you get somebody to warn you against possibly having an uncomfortable experience or something. You don't want that. You don't want that. You want to make sure that every situation you go into is predictable. So predictable that maybe you don't even need to go. That's so good. I see a positive review of a movie, I go, excellent. That's excellent. Now I don't even need to go, really, because I've already got the effect of it. I feel like I'm happy that's good. That's a good thing. Then I don't get around to seeing it for a while, you know, and then I have to watch it on TV. But that's fine, too. But I like the theater experience because it gets around you, gets into you, right? And I think that radio can do that, too. Not your show. I'm trying. You're disappointing me. But I like to experiment. You know that. And I say, but maybe it won't be funny. See, that's another feeling, too. I feel like I watched this Renoir's Rules of the Game, supposed to be a comedy. Now, I love the movie, and it's a very insightful about, you know, sort of how frivolous and horrible and selfish people can be. But the funny parts, I wasn't really laughing at. Maybe it's, and I don't know that it's that dated particularly, because I've laughed at other comedies from the 1930s. This one just didn't get me laughing out loud, really. But it still worked its magic on me. And yes, it is a sort of magic, is it? I suppose so, isn't it? You know, there's tricks to it. There's techniques, and if you do them correctly, you can make people jump or scream or laugh. Isn't that quite wonderful? And you can do that with radio, too. And can you do that with any spoken word? Yes, I have been to poetry readings where the words of the person have just really, really made me super sleepy, which is a beautiful thing. So, it's almost as if I'm listening to the wind in through the trees. Or, you know, those, like I discussed before, I like listen to white noise and stuff, or just sound of a fan to go to sleep. And a lot of it is like that. There's so much poetry that's so beautifully monotonous. It's inspired my poem called Sleep Tape. It goes like this. Oh, that's lovely. Thank you, Hardy, for that, for wasting our time. I'm sorry. But, you know, it probably resonates with you if you have ever been in the womb. You see, that's an experience that you bring to this art. So you go, that sounds like the heartbeat in utero. And I remember that because I was a fetus once. He goes, yes, yes, so was I. Now, I have a friend who's a clone, and he never heard the heartbeat of being inside his mother. And so when I did that poem to him, he's like, man, that just sounds like some machine or something that's keeping somebody alive. He got a totally different impression of it because he had a completely different experience. We bring our own past and memories to everything. And so that happens when we witness a situation or we watch a piece of art or something. We're all going to get something different out of it because we're bringing with it expectations and experience all the time. Are you the first to say that? If you've never heard it before, I am. If you've heard it before, I'm not. Isn't that interesting, too? That's an originality thing. That's called the Elvis impersonator paradox. It's not really a paradox, but I can make things. If I'm making that up, I can make the paradox part up. If you've never heard the original Elvis and you like the Elvis imitator, are you making a mistake? Say, well, I'm really moved by that. No, you shouldn't be moved. Because it's an imitation. But if you don't know it's an imitation, oh, I know. And Elvis himself, you could make the argument, is imitating, like Professor Longhair or something. So there you go. What am I hearing? How do I know? What do I know what the art is that I'm even seeing? How do I see with fresh eyes? Are the things such as fresh eyes? Do I need fresh ones? Are my eyes stale? Is it my memories? If I forget things, will I see situations differently? Yes, I know that from witnessing people with dementia. You do see things differently when your memories fail you. So we're going to go to a movie, you and I together, and we're going to see what happens. This is as much as an experiment. The movie now, it's going to be unnerving. I'm going to be actually watching you instead of the movie because I've seen it. So I'm just going to look at your face for micro expressions and everything. Don't do that. Just leave me alone. All right. Do you want anything to eat? I know people like to eat when they watch things. They even have dinner theater where you can eat. I don't know if you eat as you're watching the play. I think they serve you, and then when you're done, so that you're not, you know, making a bunch of, so this is good. Boy, I'll tell you, that Charles Nelson Reilly is very talented. So did he do dinner theater? I believe in Jupiter. Is the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater in Jupiter? Is that dinner theater? Or is it just the Burt Reynolds Theater? I don't know. I put dinner in front of everything. That's just so-and-so dinner theater. The Grauman's Chinese Dinner Theater. But it could be. Who knows? Or brunch. We're having for Mother's Day, we're having brunch theater. And it's going to be lovely. They're going to do some Chekhov or something. I don't know. Pancakes and Vanya. We don't know. But that's you know, you'd want to enhance the experience. I normally, sometimes I eat and watch things. I'll eat and watch TV shows, but not movies. Like movies, I want to be not eating, because what if I'm crunching something? Also, I watch things with subtitles, and if I look down to cut my burrito or something, that's an expression, then I might miss something, you know, because I don't speak French or Italian or Japanese. And at least I can't understand them in movies. I probably, if someone was talking to me, I might, but you know, the movie, the language goes by so fast. It's really crazy. I would watch, when I lived in France, I watched The Sopranos in English with French subtitles. It was distracting because I was like, man, I can't read this. I'm going, you idiot, you speak English. Just listen to it. That was always fun, having the shoe be on the other hand or something. So now I can't use my hand because there's a shoe on it. That's what like living in France was to me. So I have no hands. I just have feet. I am a dog. And I would say that to friends. I go, I'm a dog. I feel like a dog. I sort of understand what you're doing if you grunt and point. But other than that, I'm just looking around. And they go, well, you're in luck because we're in France and dogs can just poop anywhere on the sidewalk and everybody's fine with it. I guess there was a lot of dog poo around. Some of it very ancient because it's Europe. So it's, oh, that dog poo has been there for literally millennia. That happens in Paris. You go, how long has that been there? 1,000 years. Is that true? No, not really. It is actually, it is true for some parts of France, because when I was in Arles, which I like a lot, it's one of my favorite towns. What's this have to do with movies? Just hear me out. Nothing. There's Roman ruins, you know, and there's a Roman cemetery called Les Alicamps. And you can go there, and I think Van Gogh painted it, and it's beautiful, beautiful town. What's this have to do with anything? It all fits somehow. You know it does. So my experience from that, you know, I'm bringing something, you know, from my past, all my memories. I've schlepped them around all the time. Like I carry my home with me, like I'm a turtle or a retiree or something like that, going around with this Winnebago, a Winnebago full of accoutrements. What is that? You know what that means. You know what that was a reference to. I do. The one person I'm connecting with right now. They have a similar memory. All right, friends, we're going to go to this movie. I'm very excited. I remember I made some videos and I showed some friends one time, and about half of them were, some people said, oh, it was good. And the other half were like, oh, hey, y'all want to get something to eat? I was like, oh, dang it. They hated it. That's tough. You know, that's why I don't ask opinions ever. You know, I say, what did you think? I don't want to know. I don't really want to know. Once I've made it too, I'm sort of detached. It's like children. You know, at some point you go, yeah, it's their own person. It's not me. It's not a reflection on me necessarily. It's not my fault. I'm not responsible for them. It's time for them to go out and do their own thing. And maybe your art is like that too. Once it leaves you, you can't predict what people are going to bring to it. Right? So they bring all sorts of things to it that you might not see. They might have on a sort of 3D glasses when your movie isn't even in 3D. And so, well, you're just blurring your vision now. Oh, I don't know. It came with the 3D glasses. So I want you to see my movie. It's called Open Grove Game. And starring myself and Butchie and Lou and Hans. And I feel like somebody else is in it. But you'll see. I think Don is in it. And Ed. That's it. That's all, I think. I hope I got the credits right, because there's no actual credits in the movie. I don't credit them. Is that bad? No, I don't know. I don't know that they knew they were making it. So do I have to give them credit? If you steal somebody, like if you film somebody on the subway, you don't give them credit. You can just go, look at this person. It's like you can just steal their image. Like the Techno Viking. He was not happy about that. You go, look at this crazy dude. Well, what about that crazy? Now you've stolen his image. He's out there doing stuff. He had no control over it. Oh, what a world we live in. There's so much to think about when we think about these things. We think about our perspective and our memory and how we approach art and movies. And if you want to go off and think about it right now, that's fine. But I'd love you to just listen to this first. So here is the world debut of my movie. And it's a short film. I don't know. It's about 15 minutes. It's like a two-reeler. It's a lot of it is borrowed from the Three Stooges. In that famous Three Stooges film where they all see things very different, right? Was it Rashomon Joe or something? Anyway, so we're gonna watch it now. And you say, watch. You're not watching, you're listening. Yes, but you know, you can't help but bring images to it in your imagination. So I don't know what you're going to project onto it. Who knows? I left some room, you know, there's some sound effects and everything, but I left a little room for you to picture stuff, where they're sitting, what they're doing, who they really are, how they're dressed. And I invite you to fill in the blanks there. And there's so many blanks. On my show, really, I've considered leaving it all blank, you know? Like the ultimate coloring book would just be one of those blank books. They sold those in the 70s or something. It's called the Nothing Book. Isn't that clever? What's in it? Nothing. Oh, I get it. Thanks. It was a trend for a while, getting people to spend a lot of money with nothing. Just fool. It was a wonderful, was peak charlatanism. And it's a rock. It's a pet rock. Okay. People would buy it. It's a jar of Florida air. And it worked, you know, the novelty of it. It soon wore off. People go, well, now I have less money and I can't really buy a rock or air or a blank book. But it's nice to have a blank book because you get to fill it in. I was excited because I go, I'm going to write my own book. And I did for about 3 pages, wrote some stuff and gave up and went back to reading other people's books. So here we are. Let's walk into the studio, have my own home theater. And it has a surround sound. In that I sit behind you and repeat everything. That's happened to me. I've sat behind an old fella who was deaf. And it was an art house film. And I can't remember what it was. It might have been Ron or something like that. Or no, it was worse than that. I don't know. It was some other film. But I was sitting and these people were behind me. And he would turn to the person he was with and go, What did she say? And then his companion would repeat all the dialogue. So it was early surround sound. I liked it. It had interesting effect. And that's all I remember about. See, I can't remember the movie. I remember that. So that became the movie. Isn't that interesting? When I say, isn't that interesting, do you ever agree with me? Or do you laugh and think it's ironic? All right. So here we go. Here is my movie. Debut, I'm very excited. You can tell I'm excited because what if I forget to play it? Or it gets to the end of the hour and I never do play it. Just play it already. Okay, here we go. We're walking into the theater. We're sitting down. The seat folds down. We've got a nice... Do you like to be super up close or do you like to be back a little bit? Do you like to have the screen fill your entire field of vision? Or do you like to go back a little bit and say, I like to see that I'm looking at something that's on a screen? Or do you like the IMAX thing where you think it's so huge, I feel like I'm right there? You're not saying anything, so we'll just sit about halfway. And we'll sit on the aisle in case you feel throwy-uppy. So here we go. Without further ado, Open Grove Game by Hardy White. What's in the paper today? Fish. Someone sent you a fish wrapped in paper? That's the Omerta. The mob's going to have you killed. No, no, no. There's a feature on the old sitcom, Fish. Abe Vigoda's Fish? Yeah. I guess there's been some interest in turning it into a movie. Still, I think it's a sign you're going to be killed. Man, they sure are desperate for ideas nowadays. I have lots of ideas for movies. If I have lots of ideas, then why don't movie executives or bankers or whoever else it is that comes up with movie ideas? Who is it that comes up with movie ideas? Screenwriters? No, I think they just write down the banker's ideas in script form. What are you guys talking about? How they don't make movies like they used to. You mean on film? That too. They used to use film instead of... What do they use now? Digital something. So, are there no more filmmakers? Not really. Not like back in the day. Like the poetic realism of Renoir. Or the Italian neorealism of Rossellini. Or the heroic super-interestingism of Kurosawa. Is that an actual movement? I can coin artistic phrases. It's my right as an observer. Anyway, I'm sure there are still great films being made, but I do like the old ones. What was that great film we saw together at Carney's Art House? Oh, Open Grove Game. That was fantastic. What a film. Best I've ever seen. My number one favorite. I love it when the priest dies. The priest doesn't die. Sure he does. No, he doesn't. He's the one who raises the baby. No, you know, he doesn't because the soldier kills the mom. Whoa, whoa. What baby? Is the wife pregnant? Of course she is.
Are we talking about the same movie?
Yeah, Open Grove Game. So there's a forest, right? Yeah.
No, it's implied.
Yes, there is, because they go into it when they go hunting.
No, they're gathering wood. They're not hunting.
They aren't gathering wood. They're planting bombs.
What movie did you see?
Just because you didn't get parts of it doesn't mean that isn't what was happening.
Hang on a minute now. Let's each summarize the movie. I'll go first. Here's what I saw. There are two people sitting around in a foreign country, and they're talking about how different people are nowadays, how much they lie and do immoral things, and whether the world will ever be the same. Oh, my friend, will the world ever be the same? It isn't the same now. People have always been what they are. They are good when it suits them, bad when it suits them, and they wear suits. We'll leave it to you to sum things up so well. I haven't done much in this life, but I am a keen observer of people. Hey, there's a knock at the door. Yes, there is.
I'm looking for the priest.
There's no priest here.
There's no priest here now, or he's never here?
When he's here, he's not a priest. And when he's gone, he's not here. So I don't know what to tell you.
And you are?
Me? I'm nobody. I live off the good fortune of my friends, and this is my friend the collector.
And what do you collect?
Oh, this and that. Why are you looking for the priest?
That's my business. What about the woman he's often with?
Now, what kind of priest is often with a woman?
The logical kind?
Or the very illogical kind?
Oh, I've had it with you two. This is no joke. If the priest turns up, you tell him that the general is looking for him.
The general, eh? That's very specific. We'll let him know, if indeed there is a priest, and he would ever deign to come here. Deign. Is that the right word?
Deign.
Deign. Suddenly it doesn't sound right.
Good day to you two.
Good day, General.
Who do you think that was?
I don't know, but it's a perfect example of the type of person in the world today. Bullies and liars.
Is it safe to come out now?
Yes, priest. What did you do, seduce his wife?
Oh, worse than that. My name has come up, and now they suspect me.
Man, I can't stand these guys. Settle down, collector. They don't want you. Perhaps we should just, turn in this poor excuse for a priest and cut our losses.
Traitors! I knew I couldn't trust you.
Oh, come on, he's kidding. Calm down.
I don't think he is.
Am I?
You are. And if we do that, we're no better than them.
And what makes you think we are better than them anyway?
Well, we are men of refinement, first of all. Not so crass as to go stomping around in other people's homes looking for perceived enemies. Regardless, we have to plan for the party. We're still doing that, right?
Why would a simple thing like the threat of death stop us?
Servant, servant.
Yes, collector?
Servant, go deliver a message to the hero that he's invited to our party. It'll make the whole affair a little more classy.
Now, speaking of affairs, shall we invite the general's wife? She might want to take confession with our priest here.
You would have me dead, wouldn't you?
Not right away. You're too much fun. But eventually, maybe.
Both of you are going to hell.
I'll deliver the message, sir. Other sir.
Thank you, servant. And when you get back, let's eat some rabbit.
Not me. I prefer bread.
Very well. Run to the bakery.
But there's been a run on the bakery, sir, and they're all out.
Then find bread elsewhere, like the butcher's.
Sir,
be resourceful. That's what I barely pay you for.
Now, what movie is that?
That's the Open Grove game.
Did we see different movies? You got some of the characters right, but that is not what happened.
So what did happen?
So I'll tell you. So the collector and the ne'er-do-well are sitting around talking, that's for sure.
I'm unhappy. Unhappy? How could you possibly be unhappy? You're admired by women and men and even more women, and all you have to do is continue to take credit for things that you haven't done. Me, on the other hand, I have to depend on my charm and to woo women in their husbands' pocketbooks or I shall starve. I am unhappy. I am the unhappiest man on earth and deserve everyone's pity, but you don't hear me whining about it.
I'm unhappy because there's only one woman for me, the general's wife.
Oh, you are a fool. There are many women in the sea, and you pick Poseidon's. Move on. Play the field. I will be the flusher and flush them out, and then you hunt them down.
What are you guys talking about?
Happiness, priest. Happiness. Is it possible to be happy?
Sometimes. It depends on how well your wine cellar is stocked, I suppose.
Ha! Now the priest knows what's up.
Look. I must invite her to the party tomorrow. If you do that, one of us will end up dead, and it won't be the right one.
Who is the right one?
Not me, that's for sure. And why do you want the general's wife? She's obviously a liar if she's lying to the general to be with you.
Aren't we all, though? I'm not really. I mean, I'm pretty awful, but I'm a straight shooter.
And I only lie when I tell liars that they aren't liars. And you're no liar.
Thanks. Well, I want her here or I won't be happy. Listen, someone was around today asking questions.
What kind of questions?
The kind that go up at the end and end with a question mark. I don't care who's after us. I must follow my heart.
Into the depths of hell you'll follow it and drag us along too.
Look, I can go to the general's wife and get her here on some ruse. I'm her priest and she believes me. But if the general gets wind, he doesn't mind killing priests or collectors or shiftless ne'er-do-wells.
Oh, servant.
Yes, sir.
What do we have in the kitchen?
We have bread and rabbit and, strangely, a sword someone left.
A sword?
I think it's part of a robbery because we're also missing some things. See, they've already been here. One of us is in danger.
It might be me. I make people mad.
We all make people mad. That's why we're called mad people.
We'll be called dead people before too long.
What? The door.
Servant, get the door.
It's the general.
General, to what do we owe this pleasure?
I'm stopping by to let you know that both my wife and I will be coming to your little party in the grove.
Oh, I'm so pleased, General.
Oh, yes. He's very pleased that your wife and yourself will be here.
I was hoping we could get in some hunting.
Oh, I'm sure we could.
Does the general desire to kill someone? Or, something?
Oh, I see the priest is here. I've been meaning to talk with you.
Yes, General?
I may need your services.
Surely not a wedding or a funeral, sir.
No, of course not. I may need you to run a small errand for me, since my own notoriety prevents me from doing so, and no one would suspect a priest.
Oh, of course not. Who could ever suspect a priest of doing something?
What is the movie you're describing?
The Open Grove Game.
Both of you must have been drunk when you saw it.
I don't drink.
And I was sober as can be. I'm drunk now, though.
Listen, here's how it goes. You got part of it right, at least. They all meet in a grove, but the collector isn't after the wife. The hero is, and he's friends with the ne'er-do-well.
Both of us at the same party? Surely it's a trap.
I could care less. I'm willing to brave the trap for the good of the cause.
The cause? You mean your heart. It's the collector's wife you want.
It's true, I love her. But in these times, there's more than love, and she'd betray me if she thought she could gain something.
Then why love such a fickle liar?
Aren't we all liars now? Not me. I always tell the truth.
Oh, priest. Are you coming to the grove, too?
Of course. I may be a priest, but I go where I'm needed. And knowing the guests, there's sure to be a wedding or a funeral or a christening or a confession. And wine. And all of those things are worthy of my attention.
What a group. I thought this was an exclusive affair.
Oh, General, I see you've come as well.
They need warriors to ensure variety.
A hero, a ne'er-do-well, a priest, and a general. Our mutual friend certainly is a collector. At least he collects useful souls.
Speaking of collecting souls, we've also lost a mutual friend. They've killed the woman.
What woman? I demand to know.
For a hero, you're easily unnerved. Not our hostess, if that's what you believe, and that's very telling.
Oh, he values all lives, except the ones he doesn't. Just like the priest. He has equal use for the living and the dead.
The woman with the child? She's dead? Murdered? By whose hand?
Some say the father, some say the enemy, some say her own. We may never know. The witnesses are unreliable. And who is nowadays?
But murder is a serious thing.
No more serious than life, and we do that without reliable witnesses.
Would the gentleman like to be shown the way?
Yes, our host must be wondering where we are, standing around gossiping like this.
If you'll excuse me, though, I must make a small visit before joining you. I shall return.
Very well. I guess he's off to test the wine at some function, I imagine. We'll save you some, priest. Don't be long.
So the priest runs off because he knows the woman was secretly working for the Shade Group that was trying to save the world and that the child might still be alive.
The child?
Yeah, she's pregnant. You didn't get that?
I must have gone for popcorn.
It's clear we're talking about the same movie because the characters are similar. But other than that, I don't think we agree on the plot at all.
The plot centers around the hero's desire to have what the collector has, but everyone is really out for themselves.
They're out for themselves, for sure, but it's more about how they've all gone from having noble professions to a degraded state.
No, the whole thing is a metaphor for the impending war. When did the movie come out?
1945.
1950.
I thought it came out in 1938.
Okay, this is easily solved. Go online and look it up.
Okay. It's not listed.
What do you mean? Go to IMDb.
Nope, no such movie.
Open Grove Game.
Maybe it's THE Open Grove Game.
What's the original French title?
It's not in French. It's Italian.
Italian? French? It's Japanese. All the characters are Japanese.
Look again.
I'm telling you, there's no such movie. We must have imagined it.
Oh, that's impossible.
Sometimes people who know each other well can have collective hallucinations.
Maybe it was a small film and there's no record of it.
But the internet is a complete record of all human art and knowledge. If a work of art isn't listed on the internet, it either doesn't exist or isn't worthy of being remembered.
What if it wasn't a movie but a radio play?
Well, that could be.
That would account for the misremembering of the nationality of the actors as well.
And when did we hear it on the radio?
Maybe just now.
Could be.
Oh, Hardy, that is not how the radio show went.
So how did it go?
All right. Those are not the three different stories we told about the movie. The way it went was this. I said, I think this movie was about how moral perspective affects memory. Then I related the hunting scene in Open Grove Game.
Did you get one?
Get one what?
Whatever it is we're shooting at.
I hope not. I don't actually like killing.
Then why are you hunting?
Hunting seems like the thing to do. I mean, everyone else is enjoying it. It must have some value.
Oh, I missed.
You're a good shot.
Thanks.
The poor creatures. I mean, look at them.
I don't see them, really.
I mean, those poor creatures. The ones in the hunting party. I wonder how many are having to overcome their natural repulsion about killing to be out here firing guns at defenseless and not that tasty little animals.
Did I hit anything?
Probably not.
Why go all that trouble to force yourself to kill?
We live in a world that is built around murder. Those are the rules. Kill or be killed.
Does it have to be that way?
Who knows? But what I do know is that our host expects us to enjoy this hunting outing with all these fancy people. And who am I to make some sort of moral stand and ruin everyone's fun? So I just play along and hope I don't kill too many bunnies or birdies or whatever.
I'm with you. I'd rather shoot Madame Dubois more than a defenseless rabbit. At least I know she's horrid. The rabbit might be a decent guy.
Or not.
Yeah, hard to tell.
I knew a pheasant that was a complete jerk. Tormented his pheasant family. Finally, he was killed and made for a fabulous entree, and his family was relieved as well. But how often does that happen?
Oh, here come the flushers. Don't shoot them.
I have a funny story about what I thought flushers were.
Okay, no. First of all, there was shooting in the show, but it wasn't hunting. It was war, and it went like this.
Hey, who are we shooting?
The bad guys.
I don't even see them.
Believe me, they're out there. The minute you stop shooting, they'll shoot you.
Yeah?
Yeah, they sense weakness like a dog smells fear.
But only fearful dogs smell fear. Maybe they smell themselves.
You smell yourself.
Watch it, I have a gun.
Well, point it that way and shoot.
But I can't see what I'm shooting.
Don't complain. It must be traumatic to kill. Best not to know. All they expect you to do in war is to shoot. Killing is incidental. They hope you will, but they realize it's not guaranteed. As long as you try to kill.
Well, I do know that I don't want our side to lose. I've met some of those guys on the other side, and they are devils.
Yeah, I've met the bad ones. But I also met some guys who aren't into it as much, and they're decent.
What if we're accidentally killing them?
Well, they should have thought about that before they got born into that society.
Well, I keep shooting, but this isn't my thing. My granddad says you should always eat what you kill.
Or kill what you eat.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what he said.
Yeah, don't eat the enemy. That's going too far.
But they're already dead.
True, but they deserve some dignity.
In death, but not life?
Well, live people can be crappy. The dead, well, they're pretty helpless and pitiable, so we treat them with dignity. Once they aren't a threat, we like them.
If only all people could be born dead.
Okay, that is not the movie or the radio show or anything. You guys are crazy.
I don't see the point to all this shifting perspective. Is reality anything we say it is? I have a different worldview, and that's literal. I have a different idea about the world, so I literally see it differently, interpret it differently.
Is there no way to communicate across this rift?
Maybe there is. Maybe there isn't. It's hard to say. You know, the way that religions work for a lot of people is that everybody in the same religion has more or less the same worldview. So you can use it as a touchstone. You know, you can speak about things, but they have to be within certain rules. So you have to use the characters that everybody agrees on, because the shared experience is the only way that you can kind of almost assure something is communicated. And you have to have those touchstones. You know, that's why I'm always mentioning stuff about old television shows, because while I don't share a religion with everybody, I do share Saturday morning cartoons with a lot of people. So I talk about in the Globetrotters cartoon, that's almost like a religious context. And if I could speak within that, so you all know the rules. You know what Fred Flintstone would say and not say. You know how that goes. You know the rules of bedrock, whether you can't have internal combustion engines and stuff like that. But you can tell stories as long as you stay within those parameters. You see what I'm saying? That's a lot of times when people try to take mysticism out of the context of a religion, say, oh, I like that, but I know I'm not in that culture or anything, but it's universally true. Well, that may be. But the language they're using is specific to that experience, including everybody's misconceptions, their bigotries, the things they do every day, the things they experience. That's very important. When you take it out of that, it doesn't make any sense anymore. So if you want to experience the deep and the mystical, if you want to talk to people across a rift and look for common experiences, to communicate something to people, sometimes it's best that you sort of try to get inside their head a little bit, figure out who they think they are, and use that as a beginning. Let's say you're watching a movie. I'll tell you why everybody got everything wrong in that. Because when Butchie watches a movie, he uses his own moral self-identity to evaluate who's the bad guy and who's the good guy. So if you're looking at a movie and somebody is supposed to be the bad guy, but they believe exactly what you believe, you're going to think, well, that's not the bad guy. That's the good guy, because they're just like me. You see what I'm saying? Or somebody's supposed to be the good guy, but they believe something that's abhorrent to you. You go, wait. That's not the good guy. Like in Birth of a Nation, you watch that old silent film, and the Ku Klux Klan are supposed to be the heroes. You'll be going, whoa, wait. You'll get the movie wrong, because you'll think, well, they're not there. They're the bad guys. But it's not. It's a different perspective. And so how do we communicate like this? I don't know. That's why I try to use common cultural themes or maybe just, you know, if you're speaking across cultures, you think, well, let me see. What's everybody do? Everybody poops, or everybody wipes their butt, or something like that. Everybody vomits. So I'll just try to communicate this truth while talking about vomiting. I know that sounds horrible, right? But, you know, what are you going to do when they have different cartoons in other countries? How am I going to use that? Some French person, I have never seen this Globetrotter cartoon. Well, you know the Globetrotters because they trot the globe. Oh, everyone knows the Globetrotters. But so you're going to have different references, and people see things so different. And even crimes, you know, this is the whole Rashomon thing. It depends where you're coming from, who you think you are. And that's not going to change, you know. If you got a, everybody's got a weird vision of who they are. And so we don't ever really know who we are, do we? Oh, my friends, I can break it down a little bit basic. I know you're a human being. I know that. I don't know exactly how your brain works, but I know just from my experience that everybody has certain things in common, certain emotions, some more intensely than others. Oh, I'm losing my voice. I'm sorry. I don't know how much longer. I might have to play a little tune or something. I'm sorry I'm losing my voice. That's where I wonder where it's going to go when I lose it. It'll run off.
I'm bringing my toothbrush, and I'm bringing a hobo bag, and I'm leaving because you're not treating me right.
Why?
Because you're abusing me.
I'm abusing my voice?
Yes, I'm a little voice, and I need to be... sometimes I need to be babied.
I know, and I use it all the time. You know who I think wrecks it? Lou?
Me! Don't blame me!
Yeah, I think you're bad for my vocal cords. You're going to give me Harvey Pekar nodules or something like that. So I should stop doing it. It's that fry. You're frying my vocals, vocal fry. Oh, my friends, I know that we do have something in common. Creatures have things in common. You know, just animals and people, vertebrates. We have similar experiences. Oh, this body. That's the main one I think about. You know, you might have watched different things growing up. You might have different parents. You might have lived in a different kind of house. Maybe your house is made of straw or sticks or bricks or some composite material. Hard to say. I don't know. But your body, I know that it can give you pain, pleasure. I realize those things. So maybe I should just keep it very basic. And at the end of the day, after I'm done talking to you about fun and complicated things, well, they're complicated to me, not to everybody, I like to just bring it back to something real basic about being alive and about suffering, about joy, and all the things that are possible in the human experience. Can animals feel joy? I don't know. My dogs get so happy when I feed them. And it's like a surprise. Everything, oh, food, no way. And they jump. They literally jump up and down. When my one dog wants to go out and play and chase chipmunks, it jumps, it leaps off the ground, feet off the ground. And I don't know if that's joy or what, but its entire nervous system is just on fire with anticipation. And it's something it likes to do, so it's something approaching happiness. So I truly think my dogs do feel joy. I know that they feel sadness, and they know that they can feel pain. I know that they feel longing sometimes. And I know that sometimes they feel content. Sometimes they feel sleepy or lazy. I realize these things. So those must be the things that the very least we have in common. Even our enemies, even those that we would say are the bad guys. They get sleepy. They feel physical pain. They feel fear even. So you have to figure that out first. You know, don't jump ahead to the complex differences. It might not solve the problems. It might not heal the wounds or rifts between people. But it does help to understand. It can't hurt to know the perspective with which others are seeing the world and you. Not much you can do about it, maybe. But knowing, well, then why know it? Well, why bother to know something if you can't do anything about it? It might come in handy later? I don't know. Because sometimes it does work. Sometimes I have found common ground with people because I've been able to understand them and I haven't brought some kind of prejudgment to it. I'm not condemning them before. I'm letting them make choices on their own. And I'm trying to see the world the way they see it. Not change my point of view, but at least get inside their head temporarily. That's what art does. I can see the world in a different way, the way somebody else might see it, just temporarily, in the protection, the safety of a theater, the safety of listening to it on the radio. I can see the world like someone else might see it, like Hardy White might see the world. And if I can get in Hardy White's head for just a little second, then I might be able to have a different perspective on life. It might not be mine. I might not want to ascribe to everything he's saying, but at least I can see how another human's thinking, and that might give me some insight, and that might help me predict things a little better. And by predicting things, maybe I can avoid some of the pain in life, and maybe instigate a little more joy. So that's all I'm trying to do. Oh, my friends, I hope I've even mildly succeeded. Thank you so much for joining me and being with me. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you again next week.
Yeah. and I want to help you. You order that Hot America. You order that America 2000 and that Vim and Vigor together.
Even though you're walking alone the street, now-